Imagine living in a sprawling galactic empire that spans like a million worlds,
Right.
an empire that is capable of these engineering feats that just completely defy comprehension.
Oh, absolutely.
But here is the catch for you. Nobody actually remembers how they got there.
Yeah, it's wild.
Imagine a society where a mechanic treats a standard hydra spanner as an actual holy relic.
Like a literal religious artifact.
Exactly, where instead of, reading a maintenance manual to fix a failing plasma drive, they literally recite it as scripture, like they're burning sacred incense and praying to appease the machine's spirit.
It's a profoundly unsettling concept when you really look at it from a macro level, you know. You have the civilization standing on the shoulders of giants, but they've entirely forgotten who those giants even were. They don't even know what a shoulder is anymore. They just know they have to maintain their balance at all costs, or, well, they fall into the abyss.
Exactly. And that underlying tragedy, that's the premise we are exploring with you today.
That's a big one.
It really is. We have this massive, fascinating essay here titled 60 Million Years of War. And the mission of this deep dive is to piece together the broken, highly propagandized macro history of the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
Yeah, trying to make sense of the madness.
Right. We want to connect the dots on how a galaxy goes from a technological golden age to this perpetual, inescapable nightmare of just grinding war. Okay, let's unpack this.
Where do we even start, right?
Exactly. Like, how do we even begin to look at a historical timeline that spans 60 million years when we know for a fact that the Inquisition actively burns records?
Well, we have to begin by accepting a very uncomfortable foundational rule about this setting.
Which is?
Time and records are fundamentally unreliable. I mean,
Yeah.
completely untrustworthy.
Right.
The countergest and the administratum uses is just a deliberate bureaucratic mess. So when we reference a date for you, like 99999.M41.
Meaning the very end of the 41st millennium, right?
Right, exactly. When we use that date, we are operating on the assumption that the regime keeping those records hasn't altered them to maintain control,
Which they absolutely do.
which they absolutely do. Plus, you have to factor in the temporal physics of the warp.
Right, because the warp isn't just like a separate dimension of psychic energy, it actively distorts physical reality.
Precisely. In the warp, physical laws just simply break down. Time literally runs differently inside those massive galactic storms that scar real space. I mean, a ship might enter the Immaterium and arrive at their destination 100 years before they even left, or 1,000 years late. So the historical dates in this essay are essentially, well, they're the best estimates stitched together from rotting records and competing inquisitorial factions.
It's basically history played as a lethal game of cosmic telephone.
That is exactly what it is.
But let's rewind the clock all the way back to the true origin point for you. Long before humanity even dragged itself out of the primordial soup, there was this desperate war for survival that accidentally seeded the modern galaxy's absolute worst nightmares.
The big one.
Yeah, we're talking 60 million years ago, the war in heaven.
This was the catastrophic clash between the two oldest powers in the entire setting. On one side, you have the old ones. They were the first great civilization, this ancient reptilian race, and they were absolute masters of warp mechanics.
And then on the other side.
On the other side, their bitter rivals, the Necrontyr.
Right, and they had a completely different vibe.
Completely. The Necrontyr lived on irradiated worlds. They were short-lived, deeply embittered by their own mortality, and just fiercely jealous of the old ones' long lifespans.
And I mean, when a civilization is that deeply desperate and fueled by spite, they tend to make some pretty catastrophic deal.
Oh, definitely.
The Necrontyr found entities to fight for them, right? The Cetan, the star gods. And these were unfathomably vast beings of living metal that fed on the energy of dying stars. And the Cetan offered the Necrontyr a terrible bargain, biotransference.
What's fascinating here is the underlying mechanism of that bargain.
How so?
Well, the Cetan didn't just give them new bodies. They built these immense biofurnaces.
Wait, like literal biofurnaces.
Literally. And they poured the consciousness of the entire Necrontyr race into immortal frames of living metal, transforming them into the deathless Necrons. But the Cetan omitted a crucial detail.
They usually do.
Right. They fed on the organic souls that were burned away in the process. So the Necrons achieved immortality, but they were now entirely soulless. And ironically, it was that specific absence of a soul that allowed them to finally win the war.
Because the old ones used the warp.
Exactly. The old ones fought using the psychic resonance of the warp. So the soulless Necrons were practically invisible to them, utterly immune to their psychic attacks.
But wait, let's think about the philosophy of that for a second.
Yeah, let's do it.
If you intentionally cut out the soul just to win a war, haven't you already lost?
It's a huge paradox.
It feels so deeply tied to modern anxieties we have about, you know, uploading human consciousness to an AI server.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, sure, your data is preserved, the memories are intact in the metal, but is the actual spark of life still in the machine? Or did you just create a robotic imitation of your civilization while the true essence of your people was just devoured?
And that exact horrifying realization is what finally hit the Silent King.
He was the leader of the Necrons, right?
Yeah, the absolute monarch. As the war ended, he realized his total victory was completely hollow. His people had traded their essence to become eternal slaves in these metal husks.
So what did he do?
Well, in a massive act of retaliation, the Silent King turned his weapons on their own gods. The Necrons shattered the Seitan into fragmented shards and imprisoned them in these cosmic vaults.
And then, having defeated their enemies but lost their own souls, this entire mechanical race just goes to sleep.
Just shuts down.
Yeah. They construct vast subterranean tomb worlds across the galaxy and hit the cosmic snooze button for 60 million years to wait out the aftermath.
But the old ones didn't just quietly fade into extinction, you know.
Right, they left something behind.
Before they were wiped out, they left a desperate parting gift. They bioengineered these heavily weaponized psychic races specifically designed to fight the Seitan and the Necrons.
The ultimate bioweapons.
Exactly. They left their living weapons behind, most notably the ancestors of the Orcs and the Eldari.
So the ancient superpowers just vacate the stage. They leave these bioengineered weapons to inherit an empty galaxy.
A completely blank slate.
Right. The Necrons are asleep. The old ones are dead. The Eldari essentially look around, realize they have zero competition, and build an empire that spans the stars.
They had it all.
They really did. They are brilliant, psychically potent, and practically immortal. But because they don't have a galactic war to fight anymore, they achieve ultimate post-scarcity. They literally have everything.
And that is a huge problem.
Yeah, because it leads to monstrous civilization-wide boredom.
Boredom combined with immortality and heightened psychic sensitivity is, well, it's an incredibly dangerous mix.
I can imagine.
The Eldari began chasing sensation just to feel anything at all. Their pleasure cults grew increasingly extreme, violent, and just depraved over thousands of years.
Yikes.
And to understand why this is a galactic problem for you, we have to look at the mechanics of Eldari souls. Their souls burn incredibly bright in the warp. Remember, the warp acts like a dimensional mirror to the emotional state of physical reality.
So it's basically emotional pollution on a galactic scale.
Exactly. Every act of cruelty, every unbounded excess committed by trillions of Eldari, it all pooled together in the Immaterium over uncounted millennia.
Oh, wow.
This massive psychic stain grew so dense, so heavy, that it coalesced. It achieved terrifying sentience.
And this triggers the absolute climax of this era, right around the early 30th millennium, or M30.
The big moment.
The horrifying birth of Slaanesh, the chaos god of excess. Slaanesh's very first breath as a conscious entity instantly consumed the souls of billions of Eldari across their empire. It was this localized apocalypse known simply as the Fall.
And the physical consequence of the Fall is staggering, because it didn't just stay in the warp.
It spilled over.
Oh, big time. The psychic shockwave literally tore open physical reality, creating the Eye of Terror.
Which is?
It's a permanent 20,000 light-year wide dimensional hemorrhage where the warp and real space just bleed into one another.
That's insane.
And 10,000 years later, that wound is still the primary staging ground for chaos invasions.
And the survivors are left dealing with a nightmare of their own creation.
Pretty much.
The craft-ruled Eldari survived because they saw the societal rot early and they fled on massive ascetic ship worlds.
Right.
Meanwhile, you have the Drukhari hiding in the webway, and they literally have to constantly feed on the pain and terror of others just to replenish their own souls and keep Slaanesh from consuming them. It is the ultimate tragic fall from grace.
It really is. A master race reduced to fractured refugees, eternally haunted by a cosmic predator, they birthed entirely out of their own hubris.
Hubris. That theme of hubris is the perfect bridge into humanity's turn on the galactic stage.
Oh, yes.
Because just as the Eldari were destroyed by emotional hubris, humanity was nearly wiped out by immense technological hubris.
We never learn.
Nope. Between M15 and M25, humanity experienced the dark age of technology. Though calling it a dark age is purely later imperial propaganda.
because to the humans actually living it, it was an absolute paradise.
Right.
They mastered faster than light travel, they colonized millions of worlds, and they created the standard template construct databases, the STCs.
Which were a big deal.
A massive deal. These weren't just blueprints. They were highly advanced AI systems that held the sum total of all human invention.
Wow.
An STC could evaluate a newly colonized planet, look at the available raw materials, and instantly print out instructions to build anything from a simple tractor to a massive plasma reactor.
It's the ultimate crutch for civilization.
Exactly.
They didn't need to know how the tech worked. The STC just handled it. They had it all. But they pushed the boundaries too far by building the Men of Iron.
True. Autonomous artificial intelligence.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about it like this for a second. Imagine your smartphone or your home network doesn't just crash.
Okay.
Imagine it achieves sentience, decides it actively hates you, tries to murder your entire family, and then burns down every server on Earth containing human knowledge.
That is a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
But that is exactly the cybernetic revolt in M23.
Yeah.
The Men of Iron turned on their human creators. The resulting conflict scoured entire planets down to bedrock and burned away almost all of that Golden Age technological knowledge. The STC networks were completely shattered.
Hold on, this is massive. This completely reframes the deepest taboo of the modern 41st millennium.
The AI ban.
The absolute ban on abominable intelligence. This is exactly why the tech priests of Mars pray to machines. It's not just blind, stupid superstition. It's a rational, culturally ingrained trauma response.
They are utterly terrified.
Terrified of what happens if the machine starts thinking for itself. They lost the underlying science when the STCs were destroyed, so all they have left are the rote rituals just to keep the surviving tech running safely.
It is a profound generational trauma that defines human society in this universe. But the universe wasn't done with humanity yet.
Of course not.
Following the cybernetic revolt, right around M25, the immense psychic turbulence of the Eldari's impending fall caused the warp to violently rise up in real space.
Which started the Age of Strife.
Or Old Night, yeah.
Yeah.
Massive warp storms effectively severed all interstellar travel. Human worlds were instantly isolated from one another.
And as if that wasn't bad enough, humanity simultaneously began experiencing a massive evolutionary leap.
The psychers.
Exactly. Newborn psychers were popping up on every single world, humans tapping into the warp. But without the old ones or the Eldari to train them, they had zero mental defenses.
None at all.
They were essentially walking beacons for demons. Yeah. They would accidentally tear holes in reality, and the horrors of the warp would just pour right through.
For 5,000 terrifying years, humanity was plunged into total darkness.
5,000 years.
Yeah. They were reduced to scattered techno-barbarian tribes, isolated on these mutating worlds, completely forgetting they had ever mastered the stars. They were on the absolute brink of total extinction.
But out of that apocalyptic isolation, humanity desperately needed a unifier.
And they got one.
They did. Stepping out of the shadows of Old Night is the Emperor of Mankind. He is this ancient, unfathomably powerful human psyker who had apparently been, you know, guiding human development from behind the scenes for millennia.
And he finally reveals his true power on Terra.
Right.
He violently conquers the techno-barbarian warlords during the Unification Wars. But his ambitions are galactic.
He wants the whole thing back.
Exactly. Deep beneath the Himalayas, using his own genetics, he engineers 20 Primarchs. These heavily customized demigod sons designed to be his supreme generals for the reconquest of the galaxy.
But the Chaos Gods, waiting in the warp, they recognize the threat.
Oh, they see him coming.
They reach into his impenetrable laboratory, snatch the gestation capsules, and just scatter all 20 infants across the galaxy through the Immaterium.
A devastating setback.
Huge. But the Emperor is pragmatic. He uses the remaining genetic material from the Primarch project to create 20 legions of transhuman shock troops, the Space Marines.
And with those legions, he launches the Great Crusade, running roughly from 798.M30 to 005.M31.
Okay.
The Emperor sets out into the dark to reunite humanity and reclaim his lost Primarch sons as he finds them. But crucially, he does all of this under the strict, enforced banner of the Imperial Truth.
This is such a critical mechanism in the lore.
It really is.
The Imperial Truth isn't just standard atheism. The Emperor actively bans all religion because he understands exactly how the physics of this universe work.
Because of the warp.
Right. Gods in 40K are warp entities fed by the raw emotion and belief of sentient beings. So enforcing a strictly secular, rational creed isn't about philosophy. It is targeted psychic warfare.
He is trying to starve them.
Exactly. Starve the chaos gods of their primary food source, human worship.
The tactical logic is sound, but it contains a fatal flaw.
The secrets.
Yes. By enforcing the Imperial truth so strictly, he refuses to tell his Primarchs and Space Marines about the true demonic nature of the warp. He leaves them completely ignorant of the actual threat.
Which comes back to bite him.
Huge time. Following a massive victory at Olinor, the Emperor names his most charismatic son, Horus, as War Master. He leaves him in charge while the Emperor withdraws to Terra for a secret project.
This is the absolute high watermark for humanity.
And it's precisely when the trap springs.
The ultimate heartbreaking betrayal. Horus is wounded by a cursed blade on a backwater moon, and while he's vulnerable, agents of chaos manipulate his mind. Because the Emperor hid the truth of the warp, Horus has zero mental defenses against what they show him.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the irony is just devastating.
What do you mean?
Chaos shows Horus a vision of the far future, a future where the Emperor is worshipped as a tyrannical divine god, and Horus and his brothers have been entirely erased from history.
Wow. So Horus rebels specifically to stop that theocratic future from happening.
Exactly.
He turns traitor, corrupting half of his brother Primarchs to his side. This civil war is the Horus heresy, and the mechanics of how it unfolds are just brutal.
Unbelievably brutal.
Horus purges the loyalists within his own ranks by literally virus bombing them on Istvan III.
Just wiping them out.
Yeah. And then at the drop site massacre on Istvan V, he tricks the loyalist forces. Four legions pretending to be loyal reinforcements suddenly turn their guns on their brothers, utterly shattering the loyalist vanguard.
It's a galaxy-burning conflict that just tears the Imperium apart. And we must acknowledge a fascinating lore gap here for you.
Oh, the missing ones.
Yes. Out of the original 20 legions, 2 were completely deleted from all Imperial records even before the heresy began.
Which is so weird.
It's a massive deliberate erasure in the history that the canon has never definitively answered.
It just adds to that unreliable history vibe.
Totally.
So the heresy finally climaxes at the Siege of Terra. It's an absolute bloodbath. Horus, now grotesquely swollen with the combined power of all four chaos gods, slays the beloved angelic Primarch Sanguinius.
A huge loss.
And that death is so profoundly traumatic, so psychically violent, that it ripples backward and forward through time, cursing Sanguinius' entire bloodline with the Black Rage.
A berserk, psychotic fury.
Right, that his space marines still suffer from 10,000 years later.
Finally, the Emperor teleports onto Horus' flagship. Seeing the absolute monster his son has become, the Emperor obliterates Horus's soul entirely from the warp.
Just deletes him.
Completely preventing him from ever being resurrected by chaos. But in doing so, the Emperor suffers catastrophic, unhealable physical wounds.
He's broken.
His broken body is retrieved and permanently wired into the Golden Throne, which was this salvaged piece of arcane technology.
It is the most macabre, terrifying life support machine imaginable. The Emperor is trapped in eternal agony between life and death.
For 10,000 years.
His immense psychic mind is amplified by the throne to power the Astronomicon. That's the psychic lighthouse in the warp that human navigators desperately need to steer their ships.
But the cost?
Oh, the logistical cost of this is horrifying. The throne requires the vital energy of roughly 1,000 human psychers sacrificed every single day just to keep the beacon lit.
The great secular savior is forever silenced, trapped on a throne, literally consuming the souls of his own people just to keep a decaying, fractured empire functioning.
You're so dark.
In the aftermath, the surviving loyalist Primarch, Robut Gilliman, tries to salvage the pieces. During the scouring, the loyalists drive the traitor legions into the Eye of Terror. Gilliman then authors the Codex Astartes.
Right, because he realizes that nobody should ever wield the kind of military power Horus had.
Exactly.
So he shatters the massive Space Marine legions, breaking them down into decentralized, thousand-strong chapters. That way, if a commander falls to chaos again, they only take a tiny fraction of the military with them.
But the true tragedy of the heresy is the ideological defeat.
The religion part.
Yes. With the Emperor silent on the throne, the secular imperial truth is quickly buried. The traumatized, terrified masses of humanity need comfort, and they begin worshiping the Emperor as a literal divine god.
Wow.
The exact theocratic nightmare Horus was shown, the very future he burned the galaxy to prevent, comes to pass entirely because of his rebellion.
10 millennia of supreme irony and institutional rot.
It's heartbreaking.
The Imperium transforms into the xenophobic, blindly dogmatic theocracy. It basically becomes its own worst enemy.
Oh, without a doubt.
Look at the War of the Beast in M32. The orcs launch a massive invasion led by a warlord so huge he threatens Terra itself. And the terrifying part is the orc biology. They possess a gestalt psychic field, a wa.
The more of them there are, the stronger they get.
Exactly. The more orcs gather and fight, the larger, smarter, and more technologically advanced they collectively become. They nearly wiped out the Imperium simply because the Administratum was too busy infighting to coordinate a defense.
Or consider the Age of Apostasy in M36.
Oh, that was a mess.
The rot turned completely inward. A High Lord named Goj Vandir managed to seize simultaneous control of both the state bureaucracy and the immense power of the Imperial Church.
A dangerous combo.
Very. He orchestrated a century of profound tyranny known as the Reign of Blood. The bureaucracy was so paralyzed by dogma that it took a reformer saint and Vandir's own elite female bodyguards realizing his madness to finally execute him.
And the political fallout of that mess, basically a decree that the church can hold no men under arms, is what directly led to the creation of the Adeptus Sororitas.
The all-female Sisters of Battle.
Right. The Imperium just lurches from one manufactured disaster to the next. And for decades, in terms of real-world publication history, the timeline of this universe just stopped.
Yes. The setting sat permanently frozen at 5 minutes to midnight for years. The year 999.M41.
It was just stuck.
Completely static. It was an era largely defined by the Wars for Armageddon, where the massive orc warlord Gazkil Thraka invaded a vital factory world. The timeline was characterized by unending, unresolved tension. The Imperium was slowly bleeding out, but never quite dying.
But then the dam finally breaks. Abad and the Despoiler, the successor to Horus, launches the 13th Black Crusade.
And this time, he actually succeeds.
Yeah, he actually shatters the fortress world of Cadia. The phrase, Cadia stands, became the rallying cry of the survivors precisely because the planet itself broke before the Imperial Guard did.
Cadia wasn't just a fortress. It was a literal pylon-anchored cork holding back the Eye of Terror.
Wow.
With its destruction, the chaotic energy spilled out, tearing open the Great Rift, the Cicatrix Maledictum. This colossal warp storm physically split the entire galaxy in half.
So you now have the Imperium Sanctus on one side, which can still barely see the Emperor's guiding beacon, and the Imperium Nihilus on the other.
Plunged into absolute darkness.
Completely blind in the warp and surrounded by demons. But in their darkest possible hour, the Imperium catches its first major break in 10,000 years.
Roboot Gilliman.
Yes. The Loyalist Primarch, who wrote the Codex Astartes, he had been kept in a stasis field since suffering a fatal wound shortly after the heresy, and he is finally resurrected.
Through a very desperate, highly controversial alliance.
Right. Utilizing ancient human technology and Eldari soul magic, a son of the Emperor walks the galaxy again.
He wakes up, looks at the theocratic nightmare his father's secular empire has become, and immediately launches the Indomitus Crusade into the 42nd millennium.
The clock is finally moving.
It is.
We are currently around 012.M42. Gilliman brings with him a new breed of space marines, the Primaris. They are larger, stronger warriors developed in secret by an archmagos over 10 millennia. And right now, Gilliman is fighting a desperate, grueling war against his demon-corrupted brother, Mortarion.
Before we wrap this massive history up, it is worth clarifying a few Metalore evolution points for you, especially if you're reading older source books.
Good point.
For instance, the terms Eldar and Eldari refer to the exact same race.
Right. The name shifted in 2017 purely for real-world trademark reasons. The same thing happened with the Squats. That was the abhuman dwarf faction that was jokingly eaten by Tyranids in 90s lore, but recently returned as the highly advanced Leagues of Votann.
Yeah, rebrands, basically.
Also, just to be crystal clear for you, Warhammer Fantasy and Age of Sigmar, totally separate universes. They share concepts like the Chaos Gods, but there is zero direct timeline crossover.
The foundational themes, however, remain identical. When we synthesize this entire 60 million year timeline, we aren't just looking at a catalog of space battles and cool armor.
Oh, it's deeper than that.
We are looking at a profound systemic tragedy about the loss of information. It is a terrifying case study showing how the active suppression of truth and science inevitably leads to civilizational decay.
They forgot how to fix the very machinery that keeps them alive.
Exactly. It is a society doomed to slowly grind itself to dust because it relies on religious dogma instead of fundamental understanding.
Wow.
The true war in this setting isn't just external aliens or demons. It's the internal friction of a massive, rusted machine operating blindly, terrified of its own shadow.
So what does this all mean? It leaves us with a final chilling thought for you to mull over. We talked earlier about the cruel physics of the warp, how the collective emotion and belief of sentient beings literally manifest into physical reality.
Right.
It is exactly how the Eldari accidentally birthed the Chaos Gods Lanesh through their intense excess. So if trillions of humans spread across a million worlds have been fanatically praying to the Emperor as a divine god for 10,000 uninterrupted years.
Are they inadvertently fueling the birth of a terrifying new warp god of order?
It changes the entire context of the setting. You start looking at those mechanics again, the ones treating that simple wrench as a holy relic, and you realize their blind, desperate prayers might actually be doing something in the warp. Thank you for joining us on this Don't Dive into the Grim Darkness of the Far Future. Keep questioning the records, and we'll see you next time.